The following podcast contains explicit language.
It's Wednesday, April 1st, 2015. From Slate, it's The Gist. I'm Mike Pesca. So yesterday I went down to the subway here in Chicago, the L, not the E-L. It's written on all the signs. It says the L, and that letter, one letter L, is in quotes. I thought the L stood for the elevated, but they dropped the E. Why? Is it so that in Spanish we're not saying the? Anyway, talked to Ben Larison. I teased this yesterday. Ben Larison is the guy who put up crazy ads that told people facts about squirrels that probably aren't really true. Like, no squirrel has ever been appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court yet. Stay vigilant, humans. Well, the ads have run their course, but I did go underground to talk to Ben because I wanted to ask him what it was like, during the era when his ads populated the subway, the L. Here's what he said.
It was incredibly exciting, and also for some reason kind of made me a little anxious, because I would see people reacting, and I'd hear even people saying, like, oh yeah, have you seen those things? And it was so surreal to, like, see people recognizing this or enjoying it, and it was so exciting. But at the same time, there's no chance I was ever gonna say anything to anyone. I don't want to do that and weird out someone with this experience, and also it would make me really uncomfortable to then have whatever conversation followed. But it was so cool to just see people look at it and either smile or laugh, or then to talk about it, to see people take pictures, and then I'd go online later trying to look it up and see if they'd posted them. But yeah, it was unbelievably cool and really unique, really different from anything I've ever experienced. It was pretty amazing.
As a performer, this is a weird sort of theater. And in fact, you would do the performance, you had to wait months, and then you'd sit in the audience. That's the weirdest thing I could think of.
Yeah, it's so different from, like, doing a show. I do a lot of improv and sketch comedy and stuff like that out here. And you get that immediate gratification. But this was some sort of in-between between, like, if you write a play and then go see the performance of it, you get that delayed gratification. It's like you're witnessing the performance and the reaction, and it was just really bizarre. And because of the setting of it, being on a train during your commute, it's just that much more unusual, which was part of the idea with it in the first place, but it was really fun and cool and weird.
That was Ben Larison. He joined us live, or the podcast version of live, from the Grand/State Street station for the Red Line. Ben says his next idea is to bring the idea behind Squirrel Truth to different billboards, different trains, maybe in a city near you. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
On the show today, faking Shakespeare, or making Shakespeare up on the spot, the Improvised Shakespeare Company. And in the spiel, enough Chicago politics, unless you're in Chicago. Hey, look, I have always felt that a show has to be from someplace. I'm in Chicago, and that's the Chicago way. And that's how you get Capone. The Improvised Shakespeare Company is just that. And if I can editorialize a little, I would all say they are excellent. I saw them in New York. Now here I am in Chicago, where the Improvised Shakespeare Company is based. They do shows every Thursday and Friday at the I.O., which used to stand for Improv Olympic, but you can't say Olympics anymore. And joining me now are members of the company, Joey Bland, Blaine Swen, and Steve Waltine. Hello, guys.
Hi. Hello.
So how did it start?
The way that this group originally began, I was a student at Second City, and I put together a group of people to perform in improvised Shakespearean style on the student stage at Second City, and then it's just kind of grown.
How much do you try to say, look, wherefore means why rather than where? How much do you try to get the Shakespearean grammar right?
I think people define a lot by context, you know, so the way that he uses aspect, just like if you were watching a Shakespeare play for the first time, you might not know exactly what that means, but all the things that are going on around it help define it in that moment.
We screw it up some too, and we screw it up plenty. We know the rule, the grammar rules of why you use thou instead of thee, and we can tell you that, and we'll use it correctly 85% of the time. And then I'll say, thy looks nice today. And you can't go back and be like, whoops, gotta fix it. It's just you roll with it. It's a good improv lesson that you can't go back and fix it, but I do think that we aim for some version of verisimilitude. And at the same time, there's something fun about Shakespeare in that Shakespeare in kind of invented words. That's kind of something we look at Shakespeare now and say, you know, no one had ever written the word eyeball before Shakespeare did. Now, did Shakespeare invent the word? Maybe, but he's coining words. And so that happens with us too, sometimes deliberately, sometimes by accident.
So what's a word you've coined on stage in the moment?
That's a good
question. Oh, yeah, that is a good question.
We open every show with a rhymed prologue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of to educate the audience and also to give the show some sense of where it is, what world it's in, and also a way of telling the audience, like, it's different than what you've heard before. We deliberately rhyme at that part in the show. And I remember I was doing that prologue one time, and it was early on, and I wasn't super comfortable with that. And I remember that I rhymed, this isn't like coining a word, but it's sort of coining a phrase, that something happened, something about a face, and then for some reason I was like, and now we take you to German time and place.
Yes. And then
they, like, everyone else in the show, like, just killed me for the rest of the show.
German time.
Yeah, it's like, well, you know, we are here in German time and place. And that became like, and it was making fun of me, but it was also a way of making that a real thing for that world, where it's like, everyone knows what time they live in and what right. place, and it's all dictated by your nationalities. Once I was in an English time, you know, it was that kind of thing, and every time it was like a jab at me.
And it's, yeah, it's like creating a world for that play, like a an accidental linguistic turn that then becomes, in the world of that play, something that is always said. We always refer to German time and German place.
Right.
And someone must have done, stop. German time. That happened, right?
You should have been in
if
the show.
You could go back. Yeah.
If only I could do every bit of the rest of it. Oh, yeah, man. I could come up with that joke.
I'm sure we've done that joke before. We've done hammer jokes.
So what are the subtleties? You know, so we go see some great blues musician and the audience loves the stuff he does that's really explicit. Then he and the members of his band will say, you know, it was awesome, that one lick that you mm-hmm. did that no one else would hear. So what are the subtleties that you guys get off on that maybe we don't even realize are so cool?
We love playing with little linguistic word puns and, you know, stringing together little phrases. I remember coming backstage for an intermission one night and being like, you guys, no one laughed at my Eisenhower joke. And
yeah,
everyone was like,
brutal.
What Eisenhower joke? But, you know, trying to string
it
together.
Was ugly.
It was ugly.
What was the Eisenhower joke?
Oh, yeah.
There had been a little run of president stuff. So it was like...
But I think the idea was that there was a king who had vacated the throne or had died. And the idea was that they were going to install the general as the king. And someone said, well, you know, a military commander as a king, that'll never work. He'll never be popular. Which, of course, put me in the mind of Dwight Eisenhower. And I said something like, yes, and they are enamored of his eyes, and how are we to move forward? And in my mind, I just thought that was the greatest thing.
That's pretty awesome.
So nobody got it.
Nobody got it.
And then Steve also was shameless enough to come back and make sure... See if we had gotten it. Like, nobody got it. You guys did, right? I'm still part
you guys
of the team.
Got my Eisenhower.
We're like, oh, gross.
But there are ones that are executed better than that. That we can sense in each other. And yeah, also, like I said, to me, it's so satisfying when like three people laugh really, really hard.
Yeah.
You know.
What's your Shakespearean diet like to this day? Proper Shakespeare, actual going to see shows, reading, going to see plays. Do you do it?
We do. We did much more when the group first started. We actually made an effort as a team to read plays together, to go see plays together, to get together and watch a film. Now we tend to do it more on our own. And I mm-hmm. think we all now, especially through the group, have developed more and more of an interest in Shakespeare.
I think, too, for us, when we read it, occasionally we'll get together with a college professor and read and analyze a text. For me, what that always does is... helps seal some tropes that we can dip into. You know, like we read Twelfth Night and then the crossed identity usually comes up later in those plays that we do. Or we read Love's Labor's Lost and it's like, helps you remember, oh yeah, someone mistakenly getting a letter that's meant for someone else is a fun device and we haven't done that in a while. So then that'll pop up in a play of someone getting a letter from someone
else. And that's great comic fodder. Now, is it true that you started this company in the 90s, but in the late 80s, there was a Christopher Marlowe improv company that just stole all his stuff? Is that true?
Yeah, that's true.
They never had the degree of individuality in their characters. The verse was of another era.
But in fairness, that company stole all of its ideas from the Ben Johnson Company in the 70s.
Right. They were all murdered in a tavern.
There are a lot of people that say it would be impossible for Blaine to have started this company by himself. Mm-hmm. And some people say there's actually 20 different people that started the company. People have theories as to who it might actually be.
Right. There are Blaine Swenzians. Mm-hmm. There are Oxfordians. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So what I'd like to do now is a short Shakespearean improv scene or a couple of scenes or however you want to take it. And on the gist, we're doing this thing with They Might Be Giants where we're asking everyone to send us a fake movie title. They Might Be Giants are going to turn that movie into a song. They're going to write the theme song for a fake movie. It's hashtag not a movie. So I'm just looking through some of the recent ones. And we'll do it like, so the audience will shout out a few titles and then you'll choose one that you like that works. So I'm just going to read the most recent ones. The Fish Who Couldn't Swim, Ms. Reasonable, The Water-Soluble Submarine, The Island of Wooden Ghosts, The Papier-Mâché Moon, The Dividend and the Divisor. You like any of those?
Well, you know, we usually actually just take the very first one we could hear clearly. The first one we heard was The Fish Who Couldn't Swim.
I think that was it, yeah.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, the Improvised Shakespeare Company now presents The Fish Who Couldn't Swim.
Gentles, in thy minds thus take a vacation. See in thy head a man who cannot perform his station. See a man who in a way is not that very career which by virtue he got. See him now in thy mind's eye. See this very sad guy, for he cannot perform his duties. He cannot eat veggies or fruities. You shall hear the words that he shall say in this our very short play.
I tell thee, wife, I am not myself. Got upon thee no children, no inheritance thus to pass, as I am some fruitless duke.
Wherefore dost thou carry these burdens upon thy shoulders, Limpetio? My sweet husband, I beseech thee thus to release them, for they do bear thee down more than I would have thee so.
And yet, to be some duke herein in Venice, I, Limpetio, must indeed offer to Venice some future. Aye, the more I do give thought to my station, the greater that it doth weigh me down.
I tell thee, the more thou dost give thought to thy station, the more absent thou art from our bed. And I would have thee there in warm comfort. If no fruit can thus be born betwixt us, still let the tree grow and seek the sun.
Then, wife, indeed, give some sunlight to my tree. Absent me from thoughts of future times. To the present make thyself only. Here, beneath the shade of this coverlet, let us try once again thus to produce what spawn we thus can.
Aye, methinks thy tree grows even now.
Now that thou hast made mention of it, aye, suddenly she wilts. I even call it with a feminine pronoun.
I'm sorry. Oh, sweet husband, and forgive my laughter, for I do not think it a jest.
Nay, but now thy laughter doth echo in my tree. My tree resounds only as a reed for thy laughter. My oboe of myself indeed now plays no tune.
Come, sweet husband, how I love thee. Sprout thy tree and have thy fish swim in me.
I shall absent myself from our home a while, there to have some experience, mayhap to re-fruitify myself.
Really? You're just gonna go?
Yes. I'm going to the stews of Venice.
So let's leave our heroes there for a while. My guests from the Chicago Improvised Shakespeare Company, Joey Bland, Blaine Swen, and Steve Waltin, will continue the play after today's credits. Will the king get his groove back? Will the actors remember their characters and their accents? Shall all uses of wherefore, whenceforth be accurate? Find out after the credits. And now the spiel. Chewie, let's not make the jump to light speed. So here in Chicago, they're having a mayoral election, which I actually knew about before I got here to town, because the New York Times, my hometown newspaper, has been covering this race like I actually get a vote, but I don't. 2 days ago, front page, Rahm Emanuel, Chicago's rough-edged mayor, tries the sandpaper. That's actually not a great metaphor, right? So wait, the sandpaper? So that means he's rubbing us with sandpaper? Oh no, he's rubbing himself with sandpaper. I see. He's trying to take away the rough edges. Mm-hmm. Week before that, Chicago mayor's race is cast as a test of liberalism. Who's doing the casting, New York Times? A little bit before that, in fact, this one was right after it would be clear that there would be a runoff. Chicago mayor faults election opponent as lacking gravitas. There's been a lot of coverage in the New York Times, and I have stopped reading these stories. It is not that I am not interested. The race is interesting. It's interesting as a local election, if you take it on those terms, as a referendum on things like, is my school working? Is my street repaired? Is my government responsive? That's compelling stuff. Now, since this isn't my government that we're talking about, it's a little less compelling, but trying to stuff the facts and details of this race into the narrative of test of liberalism or rebuke for Rahm, it doesn't work. Because A, it's not a test of liberalism, and B, the drama inherent in that framing depends on the fact that Rahm might lose. Oh, if this is a test of liberalism, what does it say if Rahm is going to lose? Well, guess what? Rahm ain't losing. Rahm's been up by double digits in every poll except one. So stop with the symbolism angle and just revel in the fact that Rahm's opponent, Jesus Garcia, goes by the nickname Chewie, which, and I found this out from studying the Chicago election of 2015, all Mexican-American Jesuses go by, or at least they have the option to go by the nickname Chewie. I talked to Lauren Shulian, who is covering the election for Chicago public radio station WBEZ.
Give me one or two very Chicago-esque things that perhaps someone in Pasadena doesn't need to know about, but are kind of actually fun or fascinating about this race.
Well, if it has anything to do with people that are fascinated about the mayor or Rahm Emanuel's personality, I mean, we started the runoff with an ad of him in a fuzzy sweater saying, "Sometimes I need to listen. I own that."
They say your greatest strength is also your greatest weakness. I'm living proof of that. I can rub people the wrong way or talk when I should listen. I own that. But I'm driven to make a difference. When politics stood in the way of a full-day kindergarten or tougher gun laws, I charged ahead. And when business interests said a $13 minimum wage was too high, I didn't back down. Look, I'm not going to always get it right. But when it comes to fighting for Chicago and Chicago's future, no one's going to fight harder.
That was Rahm in a sweater. He's back to ads in regular button-down shirts. Chewie, for his part, is interesting, not for any symbolic reasons, but just because he has risen to the role of Rahm's nemesis. You can say he's Luke Skywalker to Rahm's Darth Vader. That is actually not just pure aspersion, it's a reference to an issue in this race. One point of contention in Chicago is a proposed George Lucas Museum of Narrative Art. The proposed Lakefront Museum got on Garcia's dark side.
The museum.
The monument to Darth Vader, I oppose. I don't think that it
and
should be
planned
because citizens of Chicago have not weighed in on this. They haven't been asked. You don't make those decisions by fiat. You're not the king of the city. You have to consult people.
So look, national media, Rahm's going to win. It's not going to stand for much beside the fact that the majority of Chicagoans think he's the better candidate. But in your glee to prove something broader, you have missed something great. That in the race to run America's third largest city, George Lucas just got blasted by a guy named Chewie. That's it for today's show. The Gist is produced by Andrea Salenzi, who, if she sends one of yours to the hospital, then managing producer Joel Meyer sends one of hers to the morgue. In which case, executive producer Andy Bowers cuts the body that's been sent to the morgue into tiny little pieces and feeds it to Japanese fighting fish. Join Julia Turner, John Swansburg, and special guests from the Mad Men TV Club to take those fighting fish and blast them into outer space. No, they will not be doing that. They will be inviting you to a Mad Men viewing party happening on Sunday, April 5th at the Bell House in Brooklyn. It is free. Doors open at 9 for general admission. Slate Plus can get in earlier at 8. I would go, but I can't be there. But I will say this. If I could go and could be there, I'd have to RSVP first. That's the rule to the event, and do that at slate.com/madmen. I will attend the viewing party with those remains of the fish entrails that had been blasted into space. I will take whatever is left after not burning up on re-entry, and I will force feed it to the Nussbaum family around the large table. Cause that's the Passover way, and that's how you make gefilte fish. All right, no, it isn't. I am off tomorrow. I do want to say that. On Friday, I will post a little something special on the show. In the meantime, I leave you with this gem. This is the rest of the performance of the Improvised Shakespeare Company's debut and the only ever performance of The Fish That Couldn't Swim. We last left our hero, Limpetio, the fruitless duke, in a back alley in Venice.
Well, 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 what have we got here? Some royal personage walking in our very streets.
Hold, punk. I am no simple personage. Aye, thou dost see me as royal, but royal this day I feel not, for indeed I wear no crown. What is thy price?
My price?
Thou hast a price, dost thou not? Thou walkest here beneath redded lights.
Indeed. For some ducats I can give thee some pleasures in this night, but there be other things I could give to thee as well.
Speak, what else? What else off thy menu dost thou offer?
There be spells, they say, that can help a man who has gone wayward. Come in.
What spells indeed? For indeed I must cast some spell upon my wife, thus to enchant her and ourselves.
Oh, many men come to me who cannot get their tree to grow for their wives.
Thou hast seen through me, wizard punk. Then, indeed, let us make some transaction here. Produce for me some woodening spell.
Indeed. Gather a fish from this barrel. Select one that speaks to you. They all swim about. Which one shall be thine?
This one that doth float upon the surface, unswimmed be.
He picked me.
It speaks.
Hello, gentle duke. Here now, without rebuke, I give you now the power to grow, and you shall ever be not slow. But here, remove my fleshly cover. Devour me, and you will be a great lover.
Eat the fish. Eat the fish whole. Eat it now. Eat it faster. Eat all of it.
I choke it down, and yet...
Alive am I still.
Oh!
Here ever within thy belly. Oh, thy belly is unto me now a great gem, and soon, very soon, your new card shall swim.
Swim it doth. Here is some coin, all coin I can give to thee.
Oh, coin is not my price. You shall feel my price.
What?
Indeed. This blessing doth come with a curse.
Then quick, give me the curse so that I may go home and use the blessing.
You shall have some offspring, but they shall not be the offspring that thou dost expect.
Be clear. What's going to happen?
You should have thought about the consequences before you ate me.
Oh, too haunted is this duke. Home I must go. Curses on thee. Curses on thee for taking advantage. Now, home I must go. There, my wife to make swim in her. I know not what shall hap, what moan nor shriek. I go home now to swim in my wife's new creek.
Sweet husband.
Not so sweet.
Some 9 month time since thou didst visit the stews, and here now in my arms. What is this beastly thing?
I tell thee... I know not.
Why is it making that sound?
It's got gills.
Too horrid a thing to look upon. This knife shall be the end of my sorrows.
Nay, wife, please.
And here now, that I might ever be blessed, I flee this coil, thrusting this knife to my chest.
What laughter is this? I recognize from some three months ago.
Indeed. You have paid the price, have you not?
Aye, too dearly was it. Unwived am I, and yet left only with this squidman.
Indeed. This Squidman shall be Duke in your place.
What? I cannot take the throne again. Too beset was I before, and now indeed even more so by the labors I have produced. Wife's blade here, find respite in the sea of my chest as well. Ope thy knifely gills and breathe afresh in the sea of mine own heart. Rule wisely, son, if thou art so. I know not what thy gender is, nor thy species, but here indeed to my breast. Ugh! I die in silence as the rest.
Thus be careful when thou dost seek what thou dost want, for in a curse a man can be thus taunt, Ed. Indeed, seek not something that goes against thy whim, and remember well the fish who could not swim.
That old story.
That was good.
That old story.
That was a
classic. Shakespeare classic.
Yeah.
That was a classic Shakespeare webisode. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was very good. Thank you, guys. The improvised Shakespeare company. Excellent.
Thanks, Mike.